Welcome to Engender Love. I'm your host, Dr. Shannon Ponce. Join me as we discuss all things gender so you can better connect with those around you. So let's get started as we engender love. Growing up, I had a sign on my wall that said, girls can do anything. And I remember looking at it growing up on the wall and thinking, yeah, or that's right. You know, it was a very empowering sign for me. And I was reflecting recently on that sign and whether or not having that sign up gave me any sort of different messaging than the literal message that girls can do anything. Like, did seeing that sign and having it up there indicate that there may be people that believed otherwise, or that maybe that wasn't true? And as I reflected on it and thought about how I felt growing up, I realized I never considered that not to be true. Like, it wasn't like it had to be up there because it may not be true. We got to reinforce that belief. It was more the former reason. It was more the reason that I knew the reason that there may be people that may believe otherwise. And however, I was kind of given the messaging and taught that those people were just a little behind the times. They just didn't know any better. And so I was raised knowing that women had more limited rights and were believed not to be able to do the same things in the past was what I believed. In the past was my thought. And that some of those people there were some people today that had not learned any better and so may still be hanging on to those beliefs, but poor them, they just hadn't gotten up to date. That was what I understood as a child. And so I was always kind of taught, like, don't forget this. Don't forget this because there are those people out there that don't know better yet, and don't let that messaging get into your head. Know that this is the truth. And if you ever run into one of these people and they try to stop you from doing something, then you should fight it and you should teach them and you will always win. That was the messaging that I got. And these beliefs came from my family, especially my parents, who always taught me that anything I wanted to do in life, when I say to do, I mean to become, I could become anything I wanted to. I truly did not grow up believing that there were any limitations on what I could become. And especially from my mom, who was so matter-of-fact about this fact that girls could do anything, that I could become anything, that nothing would get in my way, and anything that I did, I would just fight and I would win and I would keep going. And it was taught in that very matter-of-fact way. And these are some of the gender beliefs that I had growing up. It is something that I work on with my own clients, looking at what was the messaging that you got? What were you told about gender? And we didn't discuss a lot about gender roles for men or boys because I had a sister. I didn't have any brothers in the house. And we definitely didn't talk about non-binary because I grew up in the late 70s, early 80s through the 80s. And we were not aware of non-binary identities at that time. So this is what I encourage my own clients to do, to look at those beliefs, to begin to understand. It helps you make sense why you may feel a certain way, why you may feel uncomfortable, why you may be challenged by some aspects of your child or other people's identity or even gender expression, how they demonstrate their expression, the clothes they wear, their behaviors, how they wear their hair or makeup or body hair, etc. It may help you to understand why those things become uncomfortable, because those things that we learn as children are often become beliefs in our mind, beliefs that feel like facts. And so a lot of times when those beliefs, which we feel like are facts, when they get challenged, it may feel uncomfortable. Until we are willing to take a step back and understand what is making us uncomfortable. Oh, it's a difference in what I understood the world to be and what I am seeing in front of my face. And so we look at those beliefs, but not just what I talked about, the verbal messaging, but all the different messaging. We look at the unspoken things. We look at the messaging from other adults, from other authority figures, from TV, from movies, from society. And so when I go back and I look at what was unspoken at home, I look at the roles my parents played at home. Now, both my parents worked, and at the same time, my mom made all the meals initially. I'll explain what I mean by initially in a second, but she definitely, my whole childhood was in charge of all the groceries. As far as making the meals, she made almost all the meals. However, at some point, she went back to school, to law school. And when she went back to school, then sometimes my dad would help out with the meals. He would do some grilling, and that was his big thing. He would do grilling, and we would grill many days just to take some of the pressure off my mom from having to prepare these meals before she went to class. At the same time, my mom did most of them. She ran the house. She arranged for it to be cleaned, or she cleaned it herself, or she had help cleaning it. She made the beds. She taught us to make the beds. My dad was the one that would tuck us in at night. So I got to like kind of see some of the different roles that they played. But I also was told some different messaging too, specifically from my mom. Like I remember when I became like a preteen teenager, I was told girls should never call boys first. They should call you first. And then you can call them back, but you should never be the one to call first. So things weren't completely consistent. It varied from what we were talking about. I could become anything in the workforce, but how I acted among my peers was different. We can also discuss how her comment had heteronormative assumptions in it, but that's a subject for another day. If I also look at school and the behavioral expectations there, they did seem to vary. I felt like those that identified as boys could be more rough and tumble. They could be a little bit more disruptive. I remember thinking that it was so unfair that it seemed like they could get away with a lot more than we who identified as girls could get away with. And I remember noticing that it was more acceptable for them to have certain behaviors, whereas those of us that identified as girls, if we did the same behaviors, we would be scolded and tisk-tisked way, way more. But beyond how we were treated and our behaviors were reacted to and who got called upon more, and I do remember noticing those things as a child, very upset because it wasn't supposed to be this way, right? That's what I was taught at home. But I also think about the teachers, the adults, the staff at school. Most of the staff that were female-identified wore dresses. I rarely saw anyone in pants. I mean, I did, but not very often. And even I remember this one time where we had such a low number of boys in our class, and gym class in middle school was broken up into boys and girls. And so they asked for a few girls to go to the boys' gym. I definitely wanted to go because all things were equal. I could do anything they could do. So I was one of the girls that were sent to the boys for the year. And I noticed that there was a difference. And we were even told ahead of time, just so you know, it's going to be different. They run, I don't remember if it was a mile or for time, but we did a lot more running. We did more push-ups and sit-ups. We did not do dance. The girl side did like square dance. Occasionally we went together to do things. But the running is the thing I remember the most. The push-ups and the sit-ups I remember the most. I was very happy to do them. I wanted to show them, see, girls can do it too. That's the way I was raised. But that also had a messaging. Why was it different in the two PE classes? We could even go into why were they separated, but that's a discussion for another day. And if I look at like how my gender beliefs were formed by the other adults in my life that I ran into, that I saw growing up, the only thing I can really remember is being often complimented on how I looked. Now, I didn't have anything, again, to compare it to, but often compared, I did notice that what I wore was important, how I groomed myself, how I, you know, did my hair and stuff, that was important. Except there was one thing my parents had me do in my preteen years, and that was cotillion. If you don't know what cotillion is, it's the idea is to teach young, and I'm quoting, boys and girls end of quote. Like that's the terminology used. How manners and how to behave. So for cotillion, I was expected to wear a dress. I was expected to wear gloves. And I remember asking my mom who taught me girls can do anything, wear the same. I'm like, why do I have to wear gloves? Boys don't have to wear gloves. It's ridiculous. I hated wearing gloves. Why do I have to wear a dress? I don't think I questioned that. I questioned it probably once, but not very much. But the gloves, I really thought. And I would tell her how ridiculous the rules were in cotillion. So in cotillion, a girl could never ask a boy to dance. You had to wait to be asked to dance. You had to sit a certain way. They taught you ballroom dancing. And there was always a point where we had to get a snack. And part of it was to learn manners, that the boys always got the girls a snack. You had to pair up. They had to get you a snack and walk you to your table. Like they had to pick the food up for you. They had to carry the food. They had to bring it to the table. And I remember telling my mom, I can do that myself. This is ridiculous. But that was supposedly manners. And that's what I was taught. And so when I had kids, I started to notice the messaging too. What was the messaging I was hearing from other adults about kids? Like I often heard things on the playground, like boys like Star Wars. There were things like that. Girls like pink. And needless to say, I was pretty unpopular on the playground, even though I didn't understand gender the way I do now. When my oldest kids were young, I didn't understand the difference between gender identity and gender expression. And if you want to learn more, I have a podcast on that. But I didn't understand at the time, but I did understand feminism. I did understand gender roles. So putting that limitation and that all boys like this, all girls like this, I would often challenge it. I would often say when they were like, oh, boys like Star Wars, of course. And I would say, well, I like Star Wars. I do. I always have. What does that say about me? And that usually shut down the conversation. But even things like, well, you know, boys will be boys, they're rough. Or boys will be good boys, they're good at math and science. I mean, I would hear these things on the playground. I would hear like, girls are whiny and dramatic. So I often challenged those. I often found examples of kids that were opposite of that or myself and say, what does that say about me? Which again, made me very unpopular, shut down the conversation. But I also like to believe that maybe it challenged their beliefs, at least planted a seed, even if they're like, whatever, there's crazy Shannon. And nowadays, we have way more examples than we did before of women in different roles. We see more CEOs. We can argue not enough, but we're starting to see more CEOs, more women in politics, more women in leadership roles. And hopefully we begin to see more non-binary people in those roles as well. We're starting to have a wider variety of expression. We're starting to have a wider variety of gender roles that our kids will see and challenge their beliefs. But it's not just seeing it. It's also how we talk about it that will affect their beliefs and how we respond to it. But even though we may see more representation, one thing I've noticed is that I see more young kids in gendered clothing. I mean, we even see it from newborns now. I mean, newborns used to be swaddled in a blanket that was white, pink, and blue, and a hat that was white, pink, and blue in most hospitals. You know, so no gendered clothing or gendered blankets from the hospital. And of course, it made sense. They had to buy one thing for everybody, then making sure they stocked different things. And personally, I'm thankful because then it's not giving that idea that what was assigned at birth had anything to do with gender identity. But now somebody was clever enough to figure out how to use the caps they put on the baby's head to create a bow if a baby's assigned female at birth. We see that. We see more bows, more dresses, more bow ties for boys. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there's been a change. There's been a shift because even if we look at when I was growing up, the advertisements, if you go back to look at the advertisements from the early 80s, the famous one is the Lego one. Lego advertisements were Legos were for everybody. Everybody could build with Legos, use your imagination. And there's one advertisement in particular with a girl with long red hair braided. She's in a t-shirt and I don't remember if they're jeans or corduroys, but pants and tennis shoes. That's the way I remember dressing as a kid. That's the way I remember everybody dressing as a kid, because we were going to get dirty. And those were the clothes we wore, were those kind of very casual clothes. We didn't wear as much gendered clothing as we see now, as we see in our advertisements now, in our media now, as we see young kids wearing now. And again, it's not right or wrong. It's just looking at it and seeing the changes and the shifts and why are they happening? I mean, I think in the 80s, we were coming off the women's rights movement. And I think that made a big difference. But like, why the shift now? Why are kids, young kids, wearing more gendered clothing? I remember even talking to a preschool teacher over a decade ago and her talking about her noticing the change, that some of the preschool kids, these are 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, coming in with dresses. In particular, it was the girls, those assigned female birth, coming in with dresses and her having to talk to the family saying, we're going to go outside, we're going to paint, we're going to get dirty. Please make sure your kids are wearing clothes that are okay to get dirty. So even then, she was noticing the differences. And at the same time, we see many things pushing the envelope of gender expression of what people wear and what genders wear what. I have seen people who identify as women wear bow ties. I have seen people who identify as men paint their nails. I think that especially is way more common. And we're even starting to see people who identify as men wear dresses. And so there are shifts in different directions in different ways. And I just point them out to begin to look at how all these things, from the things you grew up with to the things you notice now, how are those things influencing your own beliefs and what you believe is fact of what is, quote, masculine and what's feminine? One way reflecting on that belief will be helpful is it will lead to you accepting yourself more, as well as accepting others more. You begin to realize, it makes sense I'm uncomfortable. I was raised to believe that people who identified as girls should not act that way. You begin to realize, it makes sense I'm uncomfortable. I was raised to believe that people who identified as boys should not dress that way. Now you get to take a step back and understand that is what is making you uncomfortable. What you see or hear is challenging that belief you formed when you were growing up. Now you have the opportunity to ask, do I want to keep that belief? And if you decide to keep it, why? And if you decide not to keep it, why not? These are the things I explore with clients who want to have a greater understanding of gender and the ability to communicate with others, whether the other person is gender diverse or whether the other person has an understanding of gender greater than they do. So understanding where your beliefs are coming from will not only have you showing up better for the people around you because of your gained acceptance and decreased defensiveness, you will also show up better for yourself. Instead of judging yourself, you can begin to show yourself compassion because you understand why you feel the way you do. Instead of trying to push away from what you're feeling because you tell yourself, usually it sounds pretty harsh, like, I shouldn't feel that way. I shouldn't think that way. You will examine with curiosity and openness. Why is that there? Then when you answer that, having the compassion for yourself to say, of course it is there. It makes sense. Having that compassion for yourself does not indicate that you will keep believing it. In fact, I would argue having compassion for yourself by understanding yourself will make it easier for you to begin to change if that is what you want. You no longer have to be defensive against your own mean critic. When you accept and understand why you believe what you believe, then you have that openness. You'll feel that openness to move forward with intention. You can see that you're not a bad person. You feel better about yourself and your learning, and you show up better for others. That openness and curiosity will extend into your interactions with others, and the decrease in defensiveness and feeling upset will begin to disappear as well. And I think that is how we begin to engender love. I have a free class being offered on my website right now. It is called How to Support Your Child Even When You're Messing Up. You will learn how to create connection regardless of the level of tension. So don't wait. Go to engenderlove.com/class and start learning now. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Engender Love. If you have more questions, visit my website at engenderlove.com. You can contact me, sign up for my newsletter, or schedule a time to meet and see how I can support you. Have a great week and continue to engender love.